This is the first year Greek class, the second session, class number 2. This is September the 20th, 1984, lessons 2.5 through 3, pages 21 to 24, paragraphs 5 through 12, in the Davis's Beginner's Greek Grammar of the New Testament by William Hershey Davis, sponsored by the Baptist Bible Seminary, which is in turn sponsored by the Bible for Today. Your teacher, Dr. D.A. Waite, the professor of Greek and director of the Bible for Today, 900 Park Avenue, Collingswood, New Jersey.
All right, let's open up with a word first, shall we, to begin our class tonight. Dear Lord, we thank Thee for Thy Word. We thank Thee that Thou hast preserved it through the centuries for this Greek language. We thank Thee for these men who have given their time and effort and funds and resources and schedules in order to study that book of books and to prepare themselves for the work that Thou hast prepared for them in the future. We ask Thee, Lord, for this evening's meeting, that Thou mayest give us wisdom in dealing with these parts of the Greek language, and help us, Lord, to derive much that we may find profit for eternity, not just for time. Make our families a blessing to us and us to our families. Strengthen us as we seek to serve our Savior. Prepare us for this great task of day by day walk with Thee. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, we usually review a little bit of what we're going to have for our quiz and then go ahead with our quiz. That's probably the best way to proceed. We did that with the Greek last time with the Hebrew and so on. So let's just review briefly. Tonight, the only two things that we have on the agenda are the alphabet and the vocabulary there for page 23. Is that correct? Paragraph 10. First of all, let's review paragraph 10's vocabulary. What would I lead or bring or go? How would you spell it?
Alpha, Gamma, Omega.
Good. And I hear, what would that be?
Akul,
and spelled how?
Alpha, Kappa, Omicron, Upsilon, yeah. Omega.
Omega, good. Akul, acoustical things and so on. I see, I look at, what would that be?
Flepo,
and that would be spelled?
Beta, lambda, epsilon, pi,
okay.
P. Okay, the
omega.
I know, it's pi.
What would I know? There are several words for I know, but this is one.
Gnosko. I'm sorry.
And that would be spelled like Gnosko.
Gamma, Omega, Sigma, Kappa, Omega.
All right, Gnosko. There's another word, Oida, for no. This is Gnosko, is the actual experience of knowing and learning and knowing and seeing and understanding as you move. The other word,
Kappa at the end?
Yes, Gnosko. No, it ends in Omega, see.
Okay.
Last Kappa, yeah, that's right. The other oida means intuitive knowledge. You sort of know from to intuition or without actual learning on the job, you might say, or learning by experience, experiential learning. This is gnosko. All right, I write would be what?
Grafo.
Remember the ro, a little bit of the tongue. Grafo. All right, how would that be spelled?
Gamma, Rho, Alpha, Omega.
Okay, Grafo. That's good. And I find Archimedes in the perfect tense. And he said, Heureka. Say Heureka with a rough breathing.
Yeah.
But we say Eureka.
Right.
But Heureka. I heard a pastor mispronounce this Greek the other day. I was thinking of the class that we mentioned that, you know, how mispronunciation is. But anyhow, go ahead. Eureka. Go ahead, Eureka, as we say.
Heurisco.
Don't forget that rough reading. That would be what? Rough reading?
Epsilon. Upsilon.
Rough reading is over the upsilon.
Oh, we are upsilon. That's right.
Oh, okay.
But if you want to say, all right, if you want to.
Oh, that's what I think of, because I think of the H
first.
Because
they're sort of together, yeah. Heurisco. It is over the upsilon, that's right.
That's right, yeah.
All right.
Rho. Yoda.
Heurisco. Yeah, Yoda.
Sigma.
Kappa, Omega. Okay, see, we're spelling out in the air, but that'll help us to get the, in our minds.
What was that fourth one there?
Heurisco, I find, or the fourth one?
I know.
Oh, Heurisco. That would be Omega. Yoda, yeah, Yoda.
What is it?
Yoda. Yoda. Haristo.
The fourth one there? You sure?
Haristo.
No,
yeah,
the fourth one was Sigma.
Oh, you mean fourth,
fourth letter?
Word?
Fourth letter. Yoda.
Haristo, that'd be Yoda. Why, what did you say?
What do you got?
I don't know. I couldn't figure out what that
was. Yeah. That is
a little bit of an accent with a great.
Yeah, Haristo. That is a little bit tight,
it
isn't it? That way they got that printed.
For some reason, I was reading a lot of these Kappas as Kais, and I almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right? That's right. The he. Yes, that's right. Remember, the he's got to go below the line. That's how you remember that.
When I got to Echo, I figured out that.
What's that?
I don't
know. Heurisco, you got that one though?
Well, now I'm thoroughly confused. But
why?
That's okay.
Why is that?
I couldn't make out what that was.
So what did you put for it?
I thought it was a Xi.
Xi?
Xi. Similar to that.
No, Xi is a big tall letter, see? That has to be nice and tall in the saddle like this, see? Has to be real tall.
Yeah, so I thought somebody slipped there. I couldn't figure out what it was.
Well, sometimes they do slip. The typographical people slip like everybody else, but... So that's Haristo. Better learn that one. Try it again. How do you spell Haristo?
Epsilon.
You better get the rough breathing somewhere. Then.
Rough breathing.
I don't care if you say rough breathing first, because it starts with a diphthong. You do put it over the second member of the diphthong, but it goes with the diphthong. So you might as well think of it as the first the thing, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then what?
Rho.
Keeps
rho.
Rho.
Yoda.
Yoda.
Sigma.
Kappa.
Omega.
All right, I wish or I will. That's what.
Fellow.
All right, fellow. Spell
theta,
epsilon,
lambda,
omega. Okay, I take or receive.
Lambda,
okay, and that's spell what?
Lambda,
alpha,
mu,
that's right, mu.
Beta,
alpha,
nu,
omega,
and then what?
Omega.
All right, I say. Lego. Spelled lambda, gamma, omega. All right, Lego. And I send.
Tempo.
Spelled.
P.
P.
No. I.
P.
P. No, P.
P.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking about.
It's a long Yoda. It's a long Yoda. P.
I've been saying pi for so long.
Yeah,
I know. I know.
That's the Anglicization.
Yeah, you're used to pi.
You know, worse is you'll get the General Electric and say P, and they won't know what you're talking about.
You got the
teach them the right way. You know, when you're doing English things, I guess you speak like the English people do, but, you know, in the Greek end, you just sort of try to blend it in that way. And remember, Yoda can either be E or E. E or E. So, that's what we have. All right, where were we?
We never spelled it.
P.
Omega. Tempo. I sent. I believe.
Pistuo.
All right. Now, that's what they said. Pistuo, like fuse. But I prefer to get those two distinct. Pistuo. Ewo. Pistuo. See, this is Pistuo. See, you can say Pistuo. And that's the Omicron Epsilon. That's like this. Ooh. Omicron Epsilon. But Pistuo, L. See, just that L.
The diphthong and the omega, you got to get all six. That's three.
That's three.
That's like three sideways. You know,
Pistuo. All right, so spelled
P, Yoda, Sigma, Tau,
Epsilon.
Omega.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I have or I hold?
Echo.
I spell
Epsilon.
Omega. Smooth breathing. Excellent.
It's smooth.
Smooth breathing, right or left?
Smooth is a rough. Bend to the right.
Okay.
It's like
a clockwise, right?
And all the languages were smooth.
Closing quote, right?
All of them, except Haristo.
Except Haristo.
Okay. All right, so much for reviewing of that. Now let's, we don't take time to review our vocabulary, the alphabet, unless you have some question on it. Anybody has any questions? Let's just go down the list on it and pronounce it Alpha.
Alpha.
Any question on Alpha? Any question on as in what?
Father.
Father. Alpha as in father. Alpha.
Alpha.
Alpha. All right. Beta as in
boy.
Gamma as in go. Delta as in day. Epsilon as in
met.
Zeta as in dads. That's good. That's what you have.
Right.
DZ or ads. ADZ. All right. That's good. Days, ads. Zeta. All right. Eta as in
mate.
I think that's the best one. Theta as in
thin.
Iota as in either
fit
or
police.
If or E. Either one. And then.
Yes. You have to have those? Both?
Yeah, you ought to have both those, yeah. Because that can be either, see.
Mm.
Like even the word iota, see, when you say, it could be iota, but it's almost a iota. It's a long I, see, iota, just that very word. So
does it have to, I was wondering about, does it have to be the long I when you say, or could it be
iota?
Iota.
Yeah,
really
it's like iota, but when you say iota, the way people pronounce words and the flow of the thing from our tongue and our lips, the tendency is to make that a long vowel. See, iota, 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 iota. It sounds a little long. It's hard to make that short. See, iota,
mm-hmm.
because it's accented.
Mm-hmm.
It's awfully hard to. You can say pin, and that's all right, but iota, iota, especially when you have a y sound. See, I O almost becomes a J I O. Not exactly, a Y-I-O, see, almost a iota, right? Y-I-O, iota, iota. Because as you're framing the I, it's almost a Y, that it's a moving vowel. It's almost like a consonant. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
iota, iota. That's why the Hebrew is jot, or its translation is jot and tittle, you know, the jot, the yod, well, that's, but in English, transliterating it in the Greek New Testament, we have J-O-T, and the J is the and maybe that's the way they originally pronounced both of them, you know, more or less not just yoda, but you know, yoda, but yoda, yoda, sort of in that breathiness.
Hmm.
So I would say either I or E for police, for I for yoda. All right, the next is kappa, as in
keep,
all right, and the next, lambda, as in lead, or any of those, you don't have to have the same word, any word is all right,
mm-hmm.
and ni, as in man, and ni as in
net,
okay. Si as in
lax.
Okay, here's a tough one. Omicron as in
log.
Log.
Coffee. That's the only way.
Coffee.
Coffee. Remember all.
For all.
Log.
Log.
I can't say log.
All right, sorry. Coffee. All. Coffee. All. I didn't. P as in
pie.
Peg as in pie. All right, that's good. That's good. That's
you
good.
Can get it in there.
You're going to get confused with that one.
P-I-E. Row as in
run,
except if you could only trill a little bit. Sigma as in
sit.
All right, those two types of sigmas, medial and final. Tau as in 10. Epsilon as in French Q. German Q. Q, okay. B as in
graphic,
and he as in ich bin ein Berliner. That's what JFK said in the German. I am a Berliner. Ich bin, I am a Berliner. Ein Berliner, however you pronounce it. In Scots, lach lammer. Right, C as in tops, and omega as in note. All right, any questions on those? All right, what I want you to do, if you get out your papers now, what I want you to do is to the capital letter, the small letter, and the name of the consonant or vowel of the letter, and then as in, and give me the, what it's like, the sounds like, in other words. All right, and then I want, of course, before I do that, I want to give you these these words, these 12 vocabulary words, and you can work on the alphabet section. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number one, I have or I hold. I have or I hold. Number two, I say. Number three, I send. Number four, I believe. too fast? Slow me down.
Just a little.
All right. Number five, I wish or I will. Number six, I take or I receive. Number seven, I find. Number eight, I see or I look at. Number nine, I know. Number ten, I lead or bring or go. Number 11, I write. Number 12, I hear. Any questions on any of those 12? Yeah. I then take the alphabet also. All right? Let me know when you're finished. Right ahead. All right, that's fine. We got these all finished. Larry, if you got yours, pass it up and I'll flip it over for grade. All right, you did well, looks like. Let me take a look at some of these capital letters. Alpha, that's all right. Beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta. Well, okay. The big one has to be a little bit higher, you know, all the way to the top. Iota, kappa, lambda, nu, mu, chi. All right, that's good. This is Manny's here I'm looking at. Omicron, p, rho. Okay, well, that rho, Manny, it's a little bit, couldn't be mistaken for a swallow going back to Capistrano. A little bit. It's sort of like this, see? Right. Sort of like a.
Yeah.
So if you got the line, if you just sort of. First, I start up like way too, but if you could kind of hook it in so it'll close. See, of course, in haste, that isn't.
Right. Well, it's going to be hard to do after 20 years. It was in 1964 when I learned the Greek alphabet.
Well, that's what they did. That's what they did, the way they make the row on the scientific screen.
Well, that's all right. I'll try to change.
Just try to make it like a P, see? But if you go, what did you say, Phil? Question?
This one looks for where we go.
What's that?
I see.
One, two, like that. Yeah, he had
three.
Oh, that's right.
How do you pronounce it?
Yes, Manny, I guess you might have one too many tails in that C. You know what I mean? You got another little throat.
Well, that's again. That's
it's one of your old things.
I'm
okay.
Stuck. Okay.
All right, now
yeah,
the tau maybe it is a little bit angry, but if you want to make it straight, you can't do it. Now the capital
okay.
T probably should be a little higher.
Right.
Epsilon phi. All right, that
yeah,
phi,
I have some
that
problem.
Phi now.
I
see that phi should be down a little below the line and.
He.
He, and a little bit distinguished from the kappa. Well, you've got to distinguish, all right, but if you could up a little higher. See, that's a little bit higher letter.
Are we making the kappa like a little K? Is that the way?
Yeah, a little K. That's what kappa is. Oh, yeah. I would say, Yeah, don't make that German.
Kappa. The book is going to be confusing.
Oh, yeah, don't make that German. Otherwise, looks all right there. Let me take a look at Larry's alpha, beta, gamma, delta. All right. That's a little bit like B flat, that delta, Larry. In other words, you got to go like this, sort of like a note on a scale, musical scale. See what I mean? It's all right, but if you could sort of, if you could sort of get a little bit more, a little bigger hook, I guess, up there on the delta. See here, delta, epsilon, all right, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi. All right, you got the exact number of loops in the xi. That's good. Omicron phi, rho is good, sigma, tau, epsilon phi, chi, all right, that's good. See, that chi, then you come right down, a little bit below the line and get a little bit of a sweep to C, omega, okay, that's good. All right, let's take a look at Steve's there. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi, all right, you got a number of loops, omicron phi, rho, sigma. That final signal goes a little bit over the line, Steve. Remember that. Tau, epsilon, phi, chi, chi, and omega. All right, that's good. 24 letters. How's come you remember? Very good. They're all set. We came out even. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. This is Lou's. All right. Zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu. All right, now I'm going to cross you, Lou, on that mu, see? That could be mistaken for epsilon, see, because it's sort of a wide loop there. Now, that's technically it may be all right now, but see, it's sort of a
If you get this acute angle,
that might be easier to be sure, because in quick looking at that, that could be taken as an epsilon. C omicron P rho sigma tau epsilon phi rho sigma tau epsilon phi chi. That's a good chi. C omega. All right. And then let's take a look at Manny. Did we start with Manny? Yeah, we did. All right, let's take a look at Phil.
No.
Okay. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta. All right, now, on that eta, Phil, that one there looks a little bit too much like an N, you see what I mean, like that. What you want to do is come down that tail. That must go down below the line there. Let's see, mu. Eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu. Well, there again, that nu, it looks a little bit like a bird. It's sort of a, you know, it's sort of wide angle. If you just try to get a little bit of a, of course, they all look a little bit like birds, something, those nu's. C, omicron, P, rho, sigma, tau. And, of course, that final sigma should go a little below the line, too. Tau, epsilon, phi, chi, C, omega. Okay. All right, I think you're coming along with your formation letters. Now, let's see if you can work on those. All right, we have a few things to hand out to you, men, before we go on to our lesson for tonight. You asked about, was there any frequency list? I said we have Bruce Metzger's Lexical Aids for Students of New Testament Greek. If you don't agree with his theology or his liberalism, his textual criticism, and so on, but he has gotten the frequency list in this book. And if you're interested in getting it, you can. I made blow up copies. I doubled the size of this. This is quite small. The little Greek letters, a little bit smaller. I doubled them and gave you the frequency list up to 100 words. Here, if you pass them out. But he has 201 to 500. Those were used 151 to 200 times, 121 to 130, 101 to 120, 91 to 100. I gave you up to 100 words. Then 81 to 90, 80, 70, 60, 55, 40, and right on down to 10 times. He's got that frequency list. So to learn the Greek words, let me just pass those out to you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right, let me pass a couple up this way, a couple up that way there. And so there's some a little bit blown up for you. We could use those, and we could add that to the vocabulary. If things get a little bit stale or a little bit not too much to do, we could do that. Now, as I recall, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, seems like we did make use of these. Not sure. Anthropos, you see, over 500 times, obviously you should know all those words. But for now, we're using this vocabulary to move along as we work into it. See, but as I say, we could use it, and you could require it, and we could make you know it, and so on. I would hope that you can know it after so long, but you can't ride too many horses at once. See, that's the problem. We want to get one horse ridden well. Now, if we find there's a gap and we've got a lot of extra time, we don't know what to do with ourselves, you know, then we go back and maybe use something like this. All right, there's another handout I want to give to all of you. And that is an analytical analysis of the way the book is made up. Lou asked after class, please pass around. If you have the extras, give them back over. Lou asked after class, is there some way you can know where you were going in this overall book? It looks like you got a piece here and a piece there and a piece somewhere else, and so, which is true. Well, I made this up when I taught this course at Bethel Baptist Church way back in 78, first year Greek. And you notice the present tense is there, and then you have the imperfect tense and the future tense, first aorist tense, second aorist tense, first perfect, second perfect, and the future perfect passive, then the noun systems, the nouns, the declensions, the pronouns, so on, all those things, adjectives, participles, comparisons. Now, I lay that out according to pages, see, so you know exactly when you're going to get these words, and so on. And you can kind of see what, actually, if you know all these declensions and conjugations, you've got it passed already. See, but I'm just laying out the whole book. That's the way it's laid out. Now, we may not take up the present indicative, subjunctive, imperative, infinitive, and participle in that order. See, this book skips around, see. But what you can do when you polish off one, you can kind of X it off. Well, I've had that, and not that I remember it, maybe, but I haven't had that, see. But it gives you kind of a picture, see. That's just an overview. And then I want to give you some these charts, pass them around. I would suggest you take two apiece, you know, two each of those, and pass them all the way around, front and back. Now, these are blank charts so that you can write your paradigms. You can make copies of these in a copy machine. You can make as many as you want, or we can make a few extras in our copy machine as the case may be. I'd take a couple to practice with. Now, what I would suggest you do on those is to do as I have done on mine, and I'm going to give you one of those. You got extras, Steve, excuse me, just pass it on, thank you. You notice, let's look at the structure of it first. On the one side, let's turn to the verb side. You see where the verbs and conjugations are? Verbs and conjugations. All right, you see it at the top?
Mm-hmm.
You see it through? Okay, you notice you circle whether it's active, middle, or passive. See three voices, active voice, middle voice, passive voice. And there are 8 forms of active, 7 forms of middle, and 4 forms of passive. So you have to know just which is which to fill in, see? And then you go whether it's indicative, subjunctive, imperative, infinitive, participle, and principal parts, maybe down here, present, future, aorist, and so on, perfect active, perfect middle, aorist, passive. These are principal parts of verbs. But you get your present, imperfect, future along the top, first aorist, first perfect, second verb, first perfect, first perfect, future, perfect, passive. So that's the verb system. Let's turn on the back now, and we get the cases and declensions. That's for nouns, pronouns, adjectives, adverbs, and participles. The words you use, you put them up there, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. The nominative, genitive, appellative, locative, instrumental, dative, accusative, vocative, and so on. That's the S for singular, P for plural, the same. Comparison of adjectives at the bottom, positive, which is good, comparative, which is better, superlative, which is best. See, good, better, best. Never let it rest that your good is better and your better is best. You know what I mean like that. And these are the comparative of adjectives. That's what my mother used to tell me all the time. Comparison of adverbs the same way. You can say, what is an adverb? Slow, I guess. And comparative, more slow, and then most slow, I suppose. The slow, slowly, slowliest. slow, slower.
Greatest. Good, better, best.
Now that's an adjective. That's an adjective. See, slow can be an adverb, but too. See,
no, how, slowly, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Well, no, but even slow. See, in other words, you can have a slow train, which is an adverb, but you can say he walked slow.
See, it's supposed to be he walked slowly, though.
Well, yeah. That's true, but you can also say walk slow. See, if you still, in other words, some of these things are both adverbs with the ly and just the plain. See, you look at those as English dictionaries, and you'll find, and slow is one of those. It can be slow. You can say the slow man, that's an adjective, but he went slow, or he walked slow along the. I think this is one of them, Steve. I usually would use he walked slowly, but there again, you could say the slow. I think modifying the verbs too, which would mean it would be an adverb. But lovely is an adjective, an adverb. An adverb that ends in ly. Usually, you form it in English by more and most. You see, when you say
lovely is good.
Well, lovely is an adjective.
Lovely.
That's right, but it's just deceptive. Well, let's take the word, for instance, how did we sit? We sat straight in our chairs. That tells how, but straight also can be an adjective. Let's get one that's a pure adverb. Well, are you good? You look well. Well.
It's probably well, better, best, again, or something like that.
Yeah, something. Well, we're having trouble with our adverbs there. Well, when you go slowly is an adverb. Usually, how about usually?
Mm-hmm.
She went to the store usually. So usually is a nice adverb, right? The positive is usually went. The comparative, she usually-er and usually-est. No, more usually, most usually. I suppose you'd have to say more and most. See, some adverbs don't have comparatives. Often. And more often and most often. That's good. That's it. That's good.
Convene the oftener.
Yeah, often. Yeah, it could oftener and oftenest.
That's doing me for a long time. Convene the oftener with Paul.
Oh, yeah, the oftener. Yes, you see, that's also true. Whenever
I thought that was man.
Whenever you have adjective or an adverb that has only 2 syllables, 3 at the most, you can use the ER and EST at the end of it, oftener, oftenest. Many times we still use the more often and most often, but you can use oftener and oftenest. These are when you have these two syllables. So anyhow, these are the things that I notice there's the word and the masculine and feminine for adjectives and participles and so on. So this is these are the forms. Now I'm going to also, in my own scratching, start with the verbs and pass out the complete verb system. Pass those around, please. For leo, which is to loose, and lepo, which is to leave, because you need that in the some forms. You need the second aorist form. Leo doesn't have it. You notice the first sheet on the verbs is active voice, the second sheet is middle voice, and the third sheet is passive voice. Now this is what we're going to learn this year, Lord willing. Active, middle, and passive voice. Now, what I would suggest that you do, just frankly, in fact, I have at times past assigned, this is an assignment, to write out, say, the complete active voice system, just to get you practice in writing and then accenting and learning, maybe two times for as a homework assignment. So in other words, and hand it in. So you write it on one of these charts. But I won't assign that at this point. What I'm going to assign, though, and what I suggest you to do is to you make these in your own handwriting, just as clear and good a Greek as you can possibly make the script. So you know that indicative, present indicative, leo is I loose, thou looses, he looses, we loose, you loose, they loose, and so on. Leo, leo, es, leo, leo, man, leo, te, leo, see, leo, see. Now if you think that's how, leo, see. If you said leo, see, you'd be confused. It's leo, see. See, you got the ypsilon and the omicron ypsilon right there, leo, see. So in other words, you know what these are, and you know the subjunctive, leo, leo, es, leo, and so on. I suggest that you write this out even before you ever start picking these up, because pretty soon you're going to pick up these all kinds of real fast. You're going to hasten speedily. You're going to get into Leo next time. We'll get into Leo, the present indicative active. See, here it is, right in the structure. See, and you can see it, where it fits in, the indicative, the present, the imperfect, the future, and you can kind of get the picture of where you're going, where you've been, and where you might end up. So that's a suggestion that I have. Now, some of these active middle forms and passive forms are identical, see. And so there's some free ones when you get over in the middle and the passive. You'll notice that. And you'll notice similarities, and you'll notice certain earmarks, we call them, to discover whether a thing is the present tense or aorist. For instance, notice the aorists, they all have a preformative, that epsilon, see. They all have that. The second aorist and first aorist both. The first perfect, as you notice, is duplicated. Leluca. It's luo, but it's a reduplication. So the first perfect and the second perfect, and even the pluperfect, is the ll. See, they reduplicate the stem. You find these are stem reduplicators. You see it over there?
Where are we?
First perfect. The second perfect over there on the top line.
Yeah.
See the duplication of the stem? And then you notice the present is leo. It starts out with a lambda. The future starts out with a lambda, luso. You put the sigma all in. Luso, luces, luce. Luso, man, luce, man, luce, then luce, see. It's the same as the present. Once you learn the present, you've got the future. Just put a sigma in there, see. And then the imperfect, you notice, that's a past tense. That has an augment. We call this an augment. This extra syllable, the epsilon, is an augment. Eluon. Just like the first aorist has an augment. See, the second aorist has an augment. I've got my ringer up high. I should have put it down a little bit lower so it wouldn't ring so long. Anyhow, can't ever tell on those rings. You notice all the past tenses have either a duplication or an augment to them. Imperfect is an augment, eluon. First aorist has an augment, elusa. Second aorist, elepon, has an augment. And then the reduplications in the perfect, perfect, or pluperfect, lel, lel, and lel. Present tense have the root itself, leo, which is I loose. Analysis, ana is up, leo is to loose. I loose up, analysis, I make a loosing up of it, or binding up, or freeing up, or something. Catalysis, isn't there a catalytic agent, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Catalysis, isn't it? And so on. Oh boy, that thing is still on. I got another call coming on the other line. That engineer was going to pick that up on the other line. Oh boy. You see, this is a long announcement. While this announcement is being made, somebody else is calling me. Dan, my son, said I should have two answering services. So I said, okay, Dan. We had a couple of rounds, so we hooked them up, see. In case somebody is busy on the one, and you got to catch the other, so I may have messages on both. All right, so this is what I would suggest to copy those over so that you have them pretty well and you can see it in your own hand, not my hand. See, this is my hand, but in your hand, see. And then I want to pass around. Yes, go ahead.
Question. Well, I don't understand. Verbs used, 1 and 2.
Yes. Leon, lepo. Now, the reason we have to put in lepo, which is to leave, is because leo has no second aorist. You see, you got elepon in the second aorist.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth over. You see the second aorist right here?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have to pull in lepo by the heels to give you a complete verb system. See? So you have something that is goes for a second aorist. See, usually a verb either has a first aorist form or a second aorist form, not both. Now, some of them have both. They throw you. But in this case, leo has a first aorist, lepo has a second aorist. And so to be complete and show you how first aorist and second aorist end and how they look,
uh-huh.
we use both of them, see. And the book will use both of them. See, your textbook uses both of them like that.
So that's just in that particular case, then?
Yes. That's just in that second aorist. And I think you find that all the way through in the second aorist for the middle, yes, and the second aorist for the passive. See? We just slip in that verb just to show you what a second aorist would look like. And that's why we pull in that number two verb lay for.
And that's
the rest of it is luo. Rest of it is luo.
Now, mind if I ask you, what is an aorist?
An aorist is a past point action. He went to the store. Point action. See? He came home. See, just a point action. The imperfect is the progressive past action. He was going home, see? He was coming back to the store. Was coming. So you put a progressive. It's a was, the past, plus the present participle of the verb you translated. So he was loosing, or he was leaving. So that's the imperfect.
Imperfect.
That's the imperfect, yeah.
So
that's
it's different than Hebrew.
Well, imperfect sometimes can be like that, isn't Hebrew? Of course, yeah, it's like future,
Hebrew,
but sometimes it can be
Hebrew
not...
was generally future.
That's right, generally future, that's right. Imperfect was generally future, that's right. But it also could be a continuing action, but you're right, it was generally future, so it's a little different. Now, this imperfect is like in English, imperfect. Do we have an imperfect? I guess it's like Spanish imperfect and French imperfect. That's more or less like it. And it's was going, see, he was going down the street, imperfect. So if you that's interesting. Present, of course, is I loose, just plain loose. Imperfect, I was loosing, see, I was loosing. Future, I will loose. First aorist, I loosed. Just like that. One point action. They call the present tense a linear action. I am loosing, really. It's linear, meaning it's a line. The aorist, they call it punctiliar action, and it's a point, see. Future, I will loose. Present technically is I am loosing right now, because that the action of the present is a continuous action, see. That's the present tense in Greek. Imperfect, I was loosing, so that's your perfect. Future, I will loose. The first aorist, I loosed. One point action. And the second aorist, again, I left to leave. You see, I left. Just a point action. The first perfect is... Go ahead.
Loose question. Yeah. Why was the lepo put in there in the second aorist?
That was because the leo doesn't have a
doesn't
second aorist. Yeah. Okay. And it would be a bare... our coverage would be bare on that whole column. For present, for
and that
active middle and past.
Could the verb have been used, though, that would have...
Have both? Then it wouldn't have been too much of a regular verb. See, luo is more or less the standard verb they use. That's the one that they use, just like in Hebrew. They used to have katal, which means to kill. Now we have, what's the one we've been using, the standard verb in Hebrew?
Kathav.
Kathav, yeah. Isn't it kathav? Isn't that it?
So would you go over this? The present is I loose?
Present is, technically is I am loosing, see?
I am loosing.
Now in English you have a a point action present, I loose right now, you know, and you have a progressive present, I am loosing, and you can have a definite, emphatic present, I do loose. See, this is all English. I loose, I am loosing, I do loose. You say you don't loose, you say I do loose. See, that's emphatic. You're emphasizing. I am too loosing. See, I don't know what I'm losing. I'm losing my marbles. No, I'm loosing my shoes. But in the Greek, the present, the emphasis is the present progressive. I am loosing. See, continuing to loose. It's continuous action. It's a durative. See, all these words, linear, line. See, that's the idea of the present.
So what would the past be then?
So the imperfect, you mean? What do you mean the past?
There's no past.
There's no past. See, there's three kinds of past. See, in Greek you got the imperfect past, the first aorist or second aorist past, and then you have the perfect past. To say nothing to the perfect, but I mean basically, it's these three types of actions.
Isn't the imperfect in the Hebrew though concerned about the future most?
Yes, it is, because it's things that are not completed in time, therefore it's still future. Yeah. It has not been agreed.
The
Greek is different matter.
Different altogether. Right.
Have you had Spanish?
No.
Well, imperfect. Yeah, all right.
That's why all this is.
All right, Spanish or French would be more or less what this imperfect is. See, Spanish is a special form. They have a preterite, pretérito they call it, which is the point action. That's like the aorist. For instance, they say, salió. He went. He went out. Salía, to go out. Salió, he went out. Or you can say salía, that's the imperfect, which is he was going out. See, that's like the Greek imperfect. Just it's the present, the past progressive. He was going out, see. But salió, he went out, just went, just a point action. That's like this. The preterite is salió. The imperfect is salía. Different form, just like imperfect and aorist. So other languages have the same situation as Greek. It's not unique to Greek, see. So the past has got to be divided into three areas. So imperfect, it's the past progressive, past durative, past linear, continuously going on. And the beautiful part of exegesis in the Greek New Testament many times devolves and revolves around the use of imperfect versus aorist. It revolves around the use of present versus aorist, or present versus imperfect. See, very important as to what you got there. So it's important that we know what verb tense it is, and mood, and so on. So the imperfect is progressive in the past. He was loosing. The future, he will loose. Simple future, like we have in English. The aorist, imperfect, he was loosing. Yes, he was loosing. Or I was loosing, if you want to stay with the I form. I was loosing. Future is I will loose. The simple I will loose is like in English. The first aorist is I loosed, just a point action. Now, when we come to Dane and Matt, if you ever come in your own course, in your own seminary, if you take it here, wherever you take it, but the Dane and Manual Grammar of the Greek New Testament, with Dane and Matt, you will find that there are all different kinds of presents, all different kinds of imperfects, kinds of futures, kinds of errors, kinds of perfects, and so on. See, there's four or five different varieties for fine point exegesis. And that's where he lays it right out in the... you know, in this particular book, it's a very nice compendium, what we call an intermediate grammar, see. And it's indispensable to see the fine points of exegetical study. So, although we're saying in general what these are, there's always exceptions, and there are always differences, like everything else, you know, you always look down and you see a lot of other things that could be. And that's why sometimes you lose your equilibrium and your balance, because you see so many possibilities, you say, you throw up your hands and say, well, which is it? Well, the thing about it is, that's why you're in the business of studying the Word of God in the Greek language, in the Hebrew language, whatever, so that you know what the possibilities are, and therefore you know what latitude you have, and then you narrow the possibilities down. There are only this many possibilities, it's that wide, see? That's all you can have in the Greek language. And then you knock off this one and this one and this one, and that leaves you, instead of five or six, you're down to one or two, see? Maybe three. Then you see what the best one of that, see, what context and various things, to see what, that's your opinion, that's the best meaning and understanding of that passage. You can, in some places you can be dogmatic at. See, other places you can. You say, well, could mean this or this sense, could mean this. That's why you open yourself up, see. But you get the wide angle, and then you narrow it down, and that's where you have to use your understanding as the Lord would lead you as to how to interpret passages. All right, so the present, I'm giving you now just the overall picture, and there are other exceptions. Basically, present is continuous action. I am loosing. I was loosing imperfect. Future, I will loose. Aorist, I loosed. Second aorist, first aorist, for all intents and purposes, identical in meaning. There's no difference whatever in the meaning of the first and second aorist. Now, historically, years ago, in Homeric Greek, maybe Attic Greek, Doric Greek, Classical Greek, there could have been a slight difference, but for all intents and purposes, they're identical in meaning. No question about the, just a different form, but the meanings are identical now.
Okay, that would be I left.
I left, that's right. I left, huh? That's right. I loosed and I left, exactly, for elephant.
Right now, see, I can see that because you have to use that, in this case, you have to use that
right.
Elephant.
Right, elephant.
Lepo.
From Lepo, yeah.
Lepo. There would be a case where, I'm just trying to think of a case where one verb would fit both cases. There aren't?
Well, there's some.
Why?
If
they're identical,
many,
what I'm asking, why would you write the same
thing
all the way down?
The thing about it is, if they're identical, what do you mean?
If first aorist and second
have
the
same
word.
Meaning, yeah, same meaning.
Same meaning and
yeah.
Same everything. You'd be writing the same
same
that's right.
suffixes and everything?
I'll tell you the reason why we didn't use one for all is because those who have the first and second aorist forms in them, the same root, are most often defective verbs. Therefore, they're defective in this tense, in this tense, in this tense, and they just have a few forms here, and they're thinly scattered, and they're not always found in the Greek New Testament. You see, they're forms that are not found as one form. So in other words, they have to have a consistency. So it's something we're going to meet up with in the Greek New Testament generally.
Is that what you're asking?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought he was asking why wouldn't it be then the same in the first aorist and the second aorist? Would it be
same
written
form?
Exactly the same?
Oh, if it means
the
same.
If the meaning is the same?
Well, it's just historically developed from a different perspective, and I don't know why it developed, but it did develop first and second aorist. It's a different form. You see, stigmatic aorist is the first aorist, the non-stigmatic aorist is the second aorist. I thought you meant why don't you use the same if they got verbs that have the two forms, they use the same verb. They're defective forms. Now, why they did it, that's another question. I can't answer that, Phil. I don't know that.
Why they
has an answer.
Historically, why they
yeah,
picked
why
the
they
two?
Had different ones.
Well,
yeah.
Way back, they must have had some.
They must have had some reason.
Meaning, yeah.
Some reason and some difference in meaning. See, that's what I say. And Robertson's large grammar, I didn't bring that in tonight, but that's a real thick one right here, A.T. Robertson. I don't agree with some of his philosophies on the text, and of course, Westcott and Hort all the way along, and various other things. He had leanings, I think, even there that were leaning toward a liberal approach on certain things. That's why I think Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville went modernist, not modernist completely, but I mean it's got teachers that are there that are out and out apostates, I would call them, in their Old Testament department, New Testament department. I mean, it's just leaning. He had a little bit of leanings along those lines even when he was writing. But anyhow, he's got a very exhaustive, and generally speaking, he's in the conservative camp. Real exhaustive Greek grammar, fat, probably 1,500 pages, 1,500, huge volume like that. I have it in there. I didn't bring it. But he has a discussion of this, first and second aorist, and I could bring it maybe tomorrow, next week, and see what the difference would be. But basically, it's the same. They had different formational histories, and as I say, I don't really know the answer to that. I never read into philology and etymology of the Greek as that technical phase.
No, I don't want to be that technical. The only
right.
thing is when it's brand new to me,
yes.
I'm such a low end of scale.
Right.
It seems very strange, some of these things.
Yes, it is a little strange, but that's the way things go. Greek is strange and Hebrew is strange. Sometimes
English is strange. I know English is strange.
Yeah.
I was hoping to find a little sanity in Greek.
Well, first aorist, second aorist. Now, second aorist is the ending's the same as the imperfect ending. See the on, s, e, omen, eta, on, you see? So there's nice similarities.
Oh,
so it's a very friendly feeling
yeah.
there.
Mm-hmm.
The sigmatic first aorist, elusa, you know, it's a sigma like the future. Luso, elusa. So all there's sigma all the way down. It's nice to be able to have a sigma in there, really, because you can tell it's an aorist with a sigma. Usually, if you got a sigma in the end, it's either a future or an aorist, and you can kind of narrow it down. And, you know, the other little earmarks to tell you. But going on with our list, the first perfect and second perfect, again, have, for all intents and purposes, identical meanings. There's no differences in meanings. There may have been historically, again, to cover all of our tracks, we must say that. But the meanings are the same now. And the perfect is an event that is begun in the past and whose results linger on into the future. In other words, if the present and imperfect are linear and durative with a line, and the aorist is a point action punctiliar, the perfect is something that happened in the past and whose results continue on into the future. See, that's the continuous nature of the perfect. That's a beautiful picture, especially when you look in, for instance, in Ephesians 2, 8 and 9, for by grace are ye saved through faith. That participle is sesos menoi, from sozo to save, and sesos menoi, perfect participle, something that has been occurring in the past whose results go right on into the future. See, that's a very important
good
thing.
Eternal security.
That's right. And the Lord Jesus on the cross of Calvary, when he said tetelestai, that's again a perfect from teleo and tet. See the reduplication. Tetelestai, tet. You see, teleo is the word, and tetelestai, and sozo is the verb, and sesos meno. I see the reduplication. Sesos, ses, S-E-S, just like here, the lel from Leo and Leluca. Tetelestai, it has been finished by me in the past, and right now at the cross I'm finishing the work, and its results, my finished work, these results continue on into the future as well. See, that perfect tense, very important to get the theological structure, the meanings of Greek tenses, and it's a very rich field, really. And there's so many things that have not been really investigated. Preachers are so busy doing mundane things, visiting the sick and studying other things and wasting time with committees, maybe in some instances not, but that they don't have the time to go into the Greek New Testament to see what the tenses are necessarily. And then some pastors work only from the English. That's all they work. And, you know, they don't go into much. Occasionally a commentary will mention a Greek word and then the pastor will, you know, bring it out. But some of these things, they lie dormant and nobody will ever see them, see? They're just there. But they've been there for all these years, ever since Paul wrote them or John wrote them or the Lord had them write them in the New Testament. But there's lots of precious things and precious jewels in that Greek New Testament and the Hebrew Old Testament that are just never brought up, maybe in times past by other men, and they'll lie there too, as I say again, unless the churches give their pastors time enough to bring some things out. Because when you're bringing out some of these deep, dark secrets of the Word of God in the Greek and the Hebrew language as a way of application, as you're preaching through the Word, they've got to give you time enough to apply it and go ahead with the other things, because otherwise, why waste your time, you might say. You have a certain amount of time and you have only 24 hours in a day. You might say, why waste your time finding out all this material if you cannot impart it and use it? You know, if you can't tell it to anybody. See, so why even bother looking at it? You say, well, isn't the, just the plain love of knowledge and love of knowing it, isn't that enough? Yes, it is sufficient. But after a couple of weeks and a couple of months and then a couple of years and then a couple of decades where you just don't use this stuff, you begin to say, well, what's the use? Is not my time more better? Is not my time better? He uses some other area, see? So you sort of, that's bad. That's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
I'm glad for Ruth's purchase of a computer, for instance. Ruth Baker, our secretary, you don't know her, Larry, but she was here in Hebrew last time. She's bought a $700 secondhand Model 3 TRS-80 computer, see? And she's gotten a lot of things from Scripture. A lot of the ideas come to her. She writes them down, but she never uses them because they're all scattered around and they're not really cohesive. So she's going to put them in the profile sorting type of thing with the computer, put it in there, and then she can sort on this and sort on that and bring them together, alphabetize them, the subject, and boy, she'll have some. And then she'll know what she's found from the Scriptures, you know, different things.
Yeah.
So that's
I've got an Apple computer, but I want to do something just like that.
Is that right?
If you get a program that can let me know.
Yeah, all right, we'll do it. Well, anyhow, that's perfect. And the proof work I had loosed, you see, that's just the same as in the past perfect tense in English. So anyhow, that's just a brief.
I had loosed?
I had loosed, yeah. I had loosed. H-A-D.
First perfect, of course,
perfect could be I have loosed. You know, I'm just saying the genius is I have loosed in the past and the present results of that loosing go on in the present. But I have loosed basically first perfect. Second, first pluperfect is I had loosed, H-A-D, right.
Oh,
first
okay,
perfect is I have loosed. Yeah, pluperfect,
okay.
I have loosed, yeah.
Okay,
have,
so first is I have.
First and second person, I have loosed, yeah.
Pluperfect is I
have loosed. Yeah, technically that's just the basic difference.
Well,
all right, anything other?
What is had? If you were drawing those lines, the point action, the line. And
I had loosed it. So
had is what?
Well, that's a point action. That's an aorist type of thing.
That's
I had.
That's pretty much a point.
Yeah, in other words, just the word itself, had, you mean? You mean just the word had or had loose?
The pluperfect use itself.
Oh, I see. No, the pluperfect use is the same as the perfect use. You got the point action in the past, something happens, and it can actually continue on in the future. But the difference is the pluperfect is when you're talking about a past event in time, see? And I can say right now in the present, I have read my Bible many times, see? But if I'm referring to that past action, yesterday, tomorrow, what I just said here, I can say, I told the fellows that I had read my Bible many times. I told the men that I had read my Bible, see?
Okay.
If I'm referring to this event tomorrow to somebody over in another room, I would say, I told the fellows, isn't that right? I told the fellows
right.
I had read my Bible, I had read, right?
So
but right now I'm telling you, I have read my Bible through many times.
Okay.
I have read, see? That's the present perfect in English. Past perfect, which is similar to first perfect in Greek. But talking about that same event tomorrow, I'll say I told the fellows that I had read my Bible through. See, that makes sense,
that
right?
That would be the first
That's the first blooper.
It won't be the future perfect
Our future perfect passive is not there, so we're saved by the bell.
Oh, okay.
But if we should have that, though, I shall have loosed, you see. I shall have loosed. I shall have been loosed. You see, some of these verbs don't have future perfect passive because of the structure and the nature of the verb, see. You know? But others do have these future perfect passive.
All right.
By the way, go over. The reason I have that form, go over the passive there on the third page. Future perfect passive. Now you do have a form.
I shall have been loosed.
Mm-hmm.
Now that would be the same, not saying I, that would say he shall have been saved.
He shall have been saved, yes. Mm-hmm. He shall have been saved, that's right. If you were the word saved. Now you see, technically I suppose he shall have been saved.
Uh-huh. No, was it say it's not like he shall have been saved.
By tomorrow at 3 o'clock, he shall have been saved 40 years. I was saved 40 years ago today, first. 20th of October, 1944. That's 84. I just thought about that. That's interesting. 40 years, the Lord. High school senior. All right. So if you go on the third sheet, you'll find the future passive over there. That is a valid form that is listed there.
There's something significant about the drop off of the second perfect passive voice for
What was this now again? What sheet are you on? The first sheet?
Last sheet, passive for
for the lapo. Elephane? In other words, a passive voice?
No, he wants to know why the second perfect is not.
Oh, I see. It doesn't occur. Either in the middle or the other. Apparently, they're identical forms. They're identical forms. There's no distinction in them. The only distinction comes in the active voice. See, a lot of these things are defective. You know, they just aren't used anymore. In the old classical Greek, they had them, you know, but then the Koine, and pretty soon they dropped off, just like in the English. The disuse of these forms just dropped off.
You mentioned Homeric, which I've heard, and classical, and I know Koine, and then modern. But you mentioned about four other ones. Are there that many different?
Attic and Doric and Ionic. Well, actually, that's all part of classical. I shouldn't confuse you with all that. But the Homeric, you usually start with that Homeric 1000. Do other modern versions of the Bible leave out any doctrines? See, that's raised up. I got about six pages on that. Is the text receptor supported only by late manuscripts? See, these are questions that he's raised. Was it vital for Erasmus or the KJV translators to have possessed papyrus texts? I don't believe it was. Are the old uncial manuscripts readings really superior to all other kinds of evidence? Does the New American Standard Version take all the manuscripts into consideration? See, these are some things that he's made, statements he's made throughout. And I take him to task for it. I don't believe that he's right on these things. I really don't. Is the wording of Scripture only partially inerrant and limited to revelation about our salvation? See, that's almost limited inerrancy, which he makes a statement there on, which I don't agree with. Do Custer and Westcott and Hort have the same questions about the assured New Testament Greek text as the believers in the traditional Greek text? Question 10, is it correct and proper to speak of text types when talking to manuscripts and so on? When did the so-called Byzantine or traditional Greek text begin and so on? There's various. I got 60 questions throughout, and I've come to 58 in here, and then I leave the other several, about 50 pages yet to go on this, but this is part one anyway. So anyway, I thought it was good to at least send the letter. I don't know how many people of our 402 people, these are people that have ordered materials on the Bible for today, interest in the text and Greek things and things like that, the translations and so on. So we send them to those folk, and how much response we got? I hope we get a lot of response. Not because it's our material, but because I think we ought to get this out. And apparently, Bob Jones University is having enough flack on the thing that they're having a half-page ad. This is a half-page ad in this present month's edition that just came, see, Faith of the Family. Ed Knox Ruckmanism, which I certainly oppose also, but by the same breath, it knocks all the others of us to believe the traditional text like Dean John William Burgon and so on and so forth. It just knocks everything down, and I think the man is wrong in many, many areas, and somebody's got to write and tell them about it, at least mention some of these things, so we're doing the best we can. All right, let's move on then to our work for next week. We have any questions you may have on lessons one or two. We took up lessons. Yeah, go ahead.
How long did it take you to write that?
Pardon me?
How long did it take you?
Well, first of all, this came out, first of all, in cassette form. It came out in seven cassettes. So that was about 2 years ago, 1982. His book was written in 81. As soon as I saw it, I knew it had to be answered. I knew it had an answer. And I put it on cassette, seven cassettes, 13 hours of cassettes, which I still have available, and it's in my voice, see. And then, by the kindness of our volunteer secretary, Mrs. Polly Freeholm, who's probably in her 70s. She likes the type. She said, anything I can do for you? I said, well, Polly, would you come over and help me on this? She said, sure. So, and before her even, there was a volunteer secretary way out in Iowa who got the tapes and reduced it to writing, but real long margins, and you know, you could hardly, and it was very poor spelling, hard to, but it was at least something. You had with your eyes, you could see. So Polly worked with that. And later on, she found it easier to work from my tapes, you know, because of this, it was so botched up sometimes. But anyway, she did use this in the tapes. So it's taken her probably from 82, 83 to 84. It's taken her at least a good year and a half to come up with this thing. The actual, and of course, I put in the headings. See, a lot of, I'm always like headings on the things as to what to title things, you know, what to, you know, paragraph by paragraph. As I talked it, I had no headings because I was just answering the issue. But I put in all these headings, which I think is helpful. And, of course, the complete table of contents, I've got all kinds of headings. So you can kind of feel your way along. You know where the thing is going, see. But so it took, as I say, my only taping of it, I probably spent the better part of a week, you know, talking 13 hours and discussing. I've got a lot of books. In fact, that's what I want to do for the answer to the debate. Now, I debated, as you know, Dr. Custer. I did with Dr. Corallo on our side, Dr. Custer and Dr. Price from Tennessee Temple, those two against two, last October, a year ago, in Illinois. And that tape is available. You can't say much in a debate. 10 minutes affirmative, 5 minutes negative, you know, it's very, and it's tight, and they've got things that are unanswered, see. So I said in that debate, I'm going to answer in my own voice the issues that are raised in that debate. See, now I want to do that. That's what I've just, time-wise, hasn't permitted me. But I got all these books up there in my tape room directly above us, ready to go on tape to answer. I want to put their voices. Here's what they say. In the debate, you can't answer all these things, and there's so many rabbit tracks. But then I want to say, all right, here's the answer to that. And then go right down the line, see. And here's they're saying something else. So what I want to do is present the package, the tape itself in toto as a unit, consecutively, and then broken down, see, that way. And it, I hope it'll be effective. I think it will. You got a man who says this, and then, all right, what is the answer? And here's the answer here. So I answered like that same way on tape. MacArthur had a pamphlet on the Textus Receptus, why it wasn't good and why the other versions were better and so on. And a pastor from California said, would you give me an answer? So I wrote, I think I had five 2-hour cassettes, maybe 10 or 11 hours on that one. And he had a secretary reduce that to writing. Now the question is, he's been after me for over a year and a half, almost 2 years, to put headings in it, you know, and so on, and then send it back to him and then retype it. And they want to get that into print too, you see, because they got a lot of people out there in MacArthur land who will follow John MacArthur, and of course he's got the other position in the text. So time is a factor. All right, so these are the, okay, Manny and Lou. All right, we'll get those, and I'll give that to Ruth. Thank you. Put that over here underneath. Are there any more checks or payments at all for tonight? Oh, you want, okay, you want to add your name, go ahead. If so, bring them up. All right, we're in the accent. We went over there from lesson three. And as I say, accent has got a lot of exceptions, and we don't want to stress that too greatly and too much. Let's see, we went last time up to all the way, well, this time all the way through lesson three. Are there any questions on any of these things? Now, did we discuss the whole thing, or do we have to stop because of time?
I think we started at paragraph 12, didn't we?
Yes, yeah, I don't think we didn't. Did we finish paragraph 12 explaining what it was and all?
No.
Yeah,
the voice
wrote down there.
Well, I don't know that we did. I know that the time ran out. We had to stop somewhere.
Yes.
Let's take a look at paragraph 12 anyhow, and just in case we missed it. The endings, of course, with the I and the thou, the he, me, ye, and so on, they, and so forth, personal endings. And the old pronouns, fragments of old pronouns that are inseparable from the verb, that's what the historical development of the language was, just like other languages have this type of development. And the second paragraph, the verb affirms action. That includes the state. A Greek verb has tense, mode. I consider it to be mood is better than mode. Mode is a form. Mood is a feeling. See, I prefer to use mood, M-O-O-D, instead of M-O-D-E. The indicative mood is the mood of certainty. See, that's the frame of mind. I am a man. See, that's certainty. I am. I might be a man. That's subjunctive, see. That's uncertainty. That's a mood. It's a feeling, see. Be a man. That's an imperative mood. That's the feeling of command, see. There's these moods. Optative mood. That's the mood of wish. I wish that I were a man, see. So this is mood. If you say mode, mode means form. Well, active, the present has a mode or a form. The past has an aorist. All these have modes or forms. See, mode, but if you say mood, that's idea. That's the mind. And many of them have mood. You see, many of the Greek texts use the word mood. Many grammarians use mood. So I prefer to use that. And voice. Tense expresses the state of the action of the verb, whether it's present, past, and so on. Mode or mood gives the manner of affirmation of the verb, how it is made, see. Is it made affirmatively? That's an indicative mood. Is it hesitatingly? That's the subjunctive mood. See, is it a command? That's the imperative mood, and so on. And then voice tells how the action of the verb is related to the subject. Is the subject doing the acting? I run. Is the other way around? I am being run by someone else. See, that's the passive voice. Active voice, I run. The other is, I am being run by someone. That's a different verb, run and run, but anyhow, that's one way to handle it. Verbs indicate affirmation by the personal ending. All right, so I think we did cover that just in a hesitating fashion. All right, let's go to see what we have for next week briefly, and then let's see what we have remaining. This is lesson 4 up to 5.5. So your assignment for next time, the 5.5, and will not include the exercises. See, we try to leave the exercises as a part of the half that is not included in the half. See what I mean? So, in times past, unless we get some difference or reason why we shouldn't do it that way, we divide the half not as to the paragraphs, but as to the exercise. We come all the way up to exercise on page 30, which exercise paragraph 29. See, that would be the extent of 5.5. So
up
one
two,
week, yeah, up two, that's right. In other words, including 28. That would be your assignment. In other words, one week we'll have only one exercise, the other week we'll have two. That's the gist of it. And so let me explain what our assignment then is. Paragraph 13, know those seven forms, lego, leges, lege, legomen, legete, legusi, and then the infinitive legain, to be saying, see, or to say. That's the first thing. Let me just go over the high spots of what we're going to require. And, of course, the vocabulary in paragraph 22, learn those words as well. And then the declension on paragraph 25. Those are the three things that we're going to be asking you to know for next time. All right? Now let's
the declension?
Yes. Pardon me?
The declension of logo?
That's right. Logos.
What does that mean in the second declension?
Oh, the second declension is the simplest. That's usually the masculine declension. That's the os endings. And the first declension is feminine endings. That's a little more difficult. And the third declension is feminine and masculine, but it's a little different formation, see. They have different formations of the endings. So it starts you with you think you want to start with the first declension,
yeah,
and then
exactly.
The second. But the second is easier to remember, and therefore they start you with the easiest. That is masculine. Ha, logos. Ha is the article, which is the omicron, with the rough breathing, see?
That's why we need the ha, like that, see. Ha logos. If you want to put that, you can, but we're not requiring. And then the article, you see, is declined. It's two, see? Two logos, see?
Where's the ha?
Yeah, I kind of lost that real quick.
That's the article, the word, see, the article.
Well, in the stem, you would be calling it ha.
Ha, that's not, it's the two words, ha, logos, right. Two logos. See, that's, see, the ending of this is of the word, genitive, ablative, logo, two logos, see. And then logo, the ending like this, becomes to, logos. See, the ending of the article is similar to the ending of the noun. So there's not too much difficulty in learning the articles, but okay. They haven't brought in the articles at this point.
That's the.
That's right, the. The word, from the word, to the word, so on, just whatever it means. All right, any question on what we have to master before we now get the meaning as an explanation as to what it is? Yes, Larry?
All I'd like to do is turn that fan.
Yeah, I would too. It is a little bit too much.
Which one?
Do you do that?
Two plates. Well, no, not that one. That one right there. That's enough. All right. If you did it right the second time, I don't know whether you pushed hard enough the second click.
Seems like it's still.
We'll try one more click.
One more click.
That second one wasn't. That's good. That's good. That second one wasn't good. All right. That better?
Much better.
Yeah. It's hard on your voice. A little bit drafty, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Very good. I really wanted to do that to start the thing off. I should have. I guess it was too much on me also because this fan gives us enough. And the air conditioner that gives enough circulation. All right, now let's see what these all mean. Let's say together the present indicative active of Lego. And by the way, we have the verb here, not Lego, but Luo, we see. Luo, Lues, Lue, Luomen, Lue, Lue, you see. We have this on our verb chart, present indicative active. See, present active voice indicative. Right there, that first thing, see, a luo.
Excuse me, did you assign, I don't want to give myself more work, but did you assign exercises?
No, not this time. Wait, hold it.
Well, there's an overlap, there's some
translation. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, I should have, yes, they should have kept translation, yeah, I missed that. I went up to five, I didn't know, but the exercises in paragraph 21, yes, I should have assigned. Yeah, I want you the Greek to English and English to Greek, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
I slipped up, you always have our exercises. Greek to English, English to Greek, yes. It's in lesson 5 that we don't do the exercise. Yeah, but lesson 4 we will do. We'll have just one set of exercises this time.
What do you mean by translating?
7 forms.
There's a Greek here.
Yeah. Translate Greek to English. That's right. Then you got the Greek, the English there. Translate that into Greek.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Just go both ways. See, we didn't do that in Hebrew. We just went Hebrew to English. But now we'll go both ways since it's a little easier to handle and a little bit different. You can understand a little better. It's more or less straightforward in the spellings and not so many exceptions and all the other things. All right, going back now to paragraph 13, present indicative active. What does that mean, gentlemen?
Present
tense.
Active.
Active what?
Voice. Indicative mood.
Indicative mood. All right. Let's say these forms together.
Could you?
Question? Yeah, go ahead.
It'll help me a lot if you could define each one as we go along. Like right. Present then means that we're
right now. I'm
continuing.
I'm
it's linear and continuing.
That's,
on.
That is the meaning of it. Yeah,
because I want to pencil that
yeah,
in.
I am saying. So you continue. Present tense. That's right. What it is.
Kind.
And or it could be just say I say. See, I am saying, as it says here in the translation, or I say. I am saying, or I say. That's right. Linear. I say or I am saying. See, actually, I am saying is the closest to the linear.
I can say I say.
That's a point.
Can be, but
yeah. Yeah. So the general genius of the present would be I am saying. But
would it be better to helpful or helpful to always remember it when I go to remember it? Would it be better to memorize it in the tense I am saying?
Yes, I would think that'd be good. Although you see, in the New Testament, you can't always translate it in the present progressive. You know, you just translate it. I say this and so on. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a man be born again, shall not see the kingdom of heaven, or God, as the case may be. But you say, I say unto you, instead of I am saying unto you. You know, in other words, but there's certain a translation. It's all right. You shorten things up and you say the present tense is say or the present tense is do or something else. But just so you know, when you exegete it and you bring out the meaning from the Greek language, that you know the full meaning is it's a continuous type of action. See, sometimes well, that doesn't make any difference.
Could
that
be?
It does make a difference.
Verily, verily, I am saying.
Oh yes, surely. No problem. That's exactly what it could be translated as, and what, as I say, the translation "I say unto you" is a perfectly good translation of the present tense. But the genius of the present tense in Greek is the continuous progressive action, the durative, the linear, line action. That's right. Okay. All right. Let's say this together in Greek then. Leges. I say it together with me. I'll try. You know, in unison there. Lego, leges, legate. Let me repeat it, and then you say it. I'll go to the first, third, second, and third. Lego, leges, legate. Go ahead.
Lego, leges, legate.
I'm going to try it again. Lego, leges, legate.
Lego, leges, legate.
I'm going to try the next, the plural now. Legomen, legate, legusi.
Legomen, legate. Legusi.
Now watch your accents. See, even though you may not know the accents and learn them, you've got to say them with the accents.
That's right.
See, let me try once more. Legomen, legata, legusi. Right.
Legomen, legata, legusi.
Not legomen, legomen. Legomen. See, hit it softly. Legomen, legata, legusi. All right. Try it. Legomen.
Legomen. Legata.
Not legusi, but legusi.
Also, it's not legate, it's legate.
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 Legate. Legomen, legate, legusi. All right, infinitive. Legane.
Legane.
All right. Did you put on your leggings today?
Now, the indicative mood is what, real action?
Indicative is real action. That's right. I say it's not. I might. I say, or you know, imperative. You say this. It's definite, affirmative action. That's indicative. See, indicative mood. I am affirming something. I am saying right now. I'm saying. There's no question about it. It's not. I might say, or I possibly am saying, or I have a doubt about saying. I am saying. See, I am saying right now. Indicative mood. The mood of assurance. That's indicative.
Okay. What I wanted to, if I could. Mm-hmm. Could I fill this in using this as a guide? I want to make a master in other words of this.
Yeah.
And we would say indicative means?
It's a type of action that is affirmative. It is positive. It is without doubt. It is
real.
Real, yeah, it's real. As opposed to imaginary or possible or potential. So that's right. All right, an active, of course, means the subject is doing the acting. I am saying. It's not I am being said, or it is being said, but I am saying. The subject is the one that's doing the acting. I am saying something.
Okay. Right. Active is the one that's doing the act.
That's
action.
Right.
The
subject is doing the action, the acting. Mm-hmm. The subject, I, for the man, or Joe, or Jim, is doing the acting.
Right. And while we're on that, when you say there's eight forms.
Seven, yeah. Yeah,
eight
six and one.
Of active.
Oh.
Forms over on here.
Oh, I see.
Eight active forms, you say?
I thought I said four forms.
Eight forms.
In other words, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. See, across the top.
8, 4, 5, 6, 7.
See, eight forms in the active voice. There are eight forms.
6, 7, 8, 9.
Well, not the future perfect passive. See?
Okay.
See, you have to eliminate that.
Right.
See, and the middle voice, I say seven. See, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All good children go to heaven, but that isn't true, is it? So second perfect eliminates that, and future perfect passive eliminates that. See, and the other ones, I say there are four forms. What I mean is four distinctive forms. Notice I have parenthetical present, parenthetical imperfect, parenthetical first perfect, parenthetical first blue perfect. I parenthesize it because it's identical to the middle voice. The passive is the same in these forms that are parenthesized. See the parenthetical elements?
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Present of the middle and the present of the passive are identical. That's why I put it in parentheses. The only pure new passive forms are future, first aorist, second aorist, and future perfect passive. See, only four distinctive forms of the passive voice.
I see, okay.
In other words, when you have a present passive, you don't know whether it's a present passive or present middle. There again, you're ambiguous. But when you have these four passive forms that you know are passive, there's nothing it could be, you know it's not middle, it's not active, it's passive. See, that's four distinctive forms. That's what I mean.
Which absolutely
identify it as a passive.
With that voice.
Passive
okay,
voice,
I see. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
No, but still.
No, all right, that's a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so learn those I am sayings on Lego. Of course, I say legase. Notice the epsilon iota sigma. That's the second person singular ending, lege, epsilon iota. Lego men, that men ending is the first plural. You find it all the time. Legete, ete is the second plural, and then the legusi, the third. These are thematic vowels, they call them, like go men. That's why they put the omicron with the hyphen. See,
what?
Thematic vowel, something to smooth out. The root is leg, see, for Lego. That's the stem, leg. And then the endings, o, ace, a, omen, eta, usi. And you learn those endings, and you put any root on of all the present tenses, and you got this, you know, the present code. Lego, you start with lu. Over here is our lu. Any stem at all, you put at the front, and then the endings are all the same. So that's your present.
So you want to nail those endings
down. Nail those endings down, everything down. And if you can, there's no rough or smooth breathing here, and if you want to go to all that extra effort to memorize where that accent is, always on the first syllable of leg, put that in your actual thing next time while you go right ahead and be peace of kind. Right? Next time. If you want to. Now, if it's too much of a strain, remember it's on the epsilon, the accent on Lego, then by all means you don't have to do it. But I mean, if it wouldn't strain you too much, just always put that leg right down. Otherwise, you don't have a leg to stand on. And it's very easy to remember. Right? Now, let's go to paragraph 14, if you're ready. Only in the indicative mood. I'm going to change that to mood in Greek. Don't have much time, 15 minutes to cover all this track. We got a lot of background. Mm. Only in the indicative mood in Greek do the tenses show time absolutely. That is time, as time. The main idea of the tense is kind of action. The German Aktionsart. Aktionsart, is, I guess it is, S-A-R-T ends in that. The kind of action, the state of action. Even in the indicative time, is a secondary idea, see. Continued action or state of incompletion is denoted by the present tense. This kind of action is called durative or linear. That's what we're talking about on the board. Durative, duration, linear. The action of the verb is shown in progress as going on. Observe that the indicative mood in Greek has practically the same declarative force as it has in English. In 13, the subject is presented as acting. In other words, I am saying. That's what it should be. Conjugated verb means to give all the variations of terminations. Paragraph 15, like Lego, that's conjugation. To present all the different inflections in the present, indicative, active. All right, 16, observe in the conjugation of Lego, you got the stem and all the other things. You can learn that or learn it not, as the case may be. I'm not going to, that's detail, and that's paragraph 17, the personal endings of primary tenses, the primitive form are me, see, and so on. Again, that's all technical. The main thing is you learn that code, the actual conjugation. I don't care if you can explain the theory behind it. Just know the result of it. See, that's the main thing. Notice in paragraph 18.
You're just saying that was in 16?
That was 17.
16.
Yeah. Well, 16 and 17. You can take it or leave it. Just look it over, the thematic vowel, all that. It's some sort of... It's sort of nonsensical. It's good if you really want to dig into this and that and know all the wherefores and whys. But the main thing is the bottom lines.
Bottom line.
You know Lego, legis, lege, legamen, legate, legacy, or don't you see? Mm-hmm. You know what it means. You know, that's the main thing. How it's formed, you know, that's good to have in the textbook. I'm not arguing that, but it's for background. I call it background. Just like in Hebrew, a lot of these things are background information. Same with this. Don't get too disappointed if you can't realize why every little thing is not this way or that way, because you got, as soon as you start learning this, and I used to learn this, I used to be very careful on all these things, and you go over to the next couple of chapters, the next couple of chapters, oh, the exception here is sitting. By the time you finish the exceptions, you wish you hadn't even memorized the rules.
I'm glad when you point that out.
Oh, yeah, it's it becomes the next thing to ridiculous. I mean, that's my frank opinion, looking back on the thing from after many years of studying it. I just think, learn what you got to learn and don't bother your pretty little or big head about other things. Handsome, as a kiss for me. All right. So paragraph 18 is background. Paragraph 16 and 17 is background. If you're interested in looking at it, that's fine. All men had that and so on. Paragraph 19, the resultant endings is R-O, A-S-A, Omen, Eta, Usi. That's fine. That's foreground. See, that's foreground. That's highlight. That's exactly. There's the final bottom line is paragraph 19. But you've already learned that in paragraph 13, so you don't have to learn it twice. These forms must be mastered. Notice that. Nothing short of absolute mastery of forms will answer the purpose. I agree with that. You've got to know that present indicative active cold, just in your sleep, up one side and down the other. No question about it.
No, second declension or masculine.
Second declension or masculine, that's right. Notice in paragraph 20, the infinitive does not have personal endings. It's a verbal substantive in a fixed form, so ain, epsilon, the other new, legain, that's what it is. Now the exercises. Translate in English. The blepe is he sees. Akumen, I hear. I am hearing, see? And gnoskete is ye are knowing. See, in other words, you know these verbs from the first lesson, and now you just put these endings on. See, that's all they're trying to. It's very simple. And if I were you, I'd put it in the present progressive. I'd say, I am seeing. I am hearing. Blepe, he is, or he, she, or it is seeing. We are hearing. For instance, gnoskete is ye are knowing. I'd put it like that. And I would go ahead with the ye and the you. Ye is a specific translation for the plural, second plural. Thou, in the second to singular. Otherwise, if you're going to say the you, it's all right, I guess, say you singular, then it's all right, you plural, and so on and so forth. But otherwise, you, that you're confusing, see, aren't you? But if you get the ye, it's an English language, so I feel it's a good thing to have all that. But anyway, you can do as you please. I'm not trying to make a Quaker out of you, but it's a good biblical translation. The English language is clear. I think it's clear, yeah. All right, then notice the translations, Greek and English. We know, see? If gnosko means I know, gnoskomen is we know, see? Omen, see? Just gnosko, gnoskomen. You just have to put those in, and that's what we want for that. All right, then the lesson five. Any questions on lesson four before going on to five?
I'm sorry. Yeah. What do you say in 20?
20 is just about the infinitive. It's just which you already have known in number 13. So the main thing in 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20 is paragraph 13, with the exception of 14. 14 gives you theory. 14 is essential to know the theory of what the meaning of the tense is, present tense, and what it, the action of it, so on. But 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19 is more or less, and 20 is the theory behind these seven forms up here, see. The main thing, learn the seven forms, know what they mean, and then translate in English into Greek. Any questions further on four? All right, let's go to five, second declension or declension of the omicron stems, and that is masculine. It's ha. All right, all these are ha. And you can use this article ha with a rough breathing, if you wish, before each one of them. In fact, when you memorize a Greek noun, you should always memorize the article with it because it gives the gender. You cannot always tell by ending. Sometimes they look like a masculine ending, but they're feminine gender. The article tells the story. See? Sometimes you have crossbreeds. You got things that have a feminine-looking article and a masculine-looking noun, and vice versa. See? So you really have to memorize that article.
So you want us to keep the article in the minute?
I would think. I mean, it doesn't require you at this point. Later on, you're going to see.
You don't see them here, though.
No, you don't see them there. First, look on page 83. Look at the vocabulary, paragraph 186. Haima, see the word ta there?
Mm-hmm.
All right, memorize it. Ta haima, page 83. You see it at the bottom? 83. Grama, ta grama, see? The letter. Ta thelema, see? You have the articles always supplied. Here in the first few, they don't want to confuse you, so they don't put them in. So you don't have to put them in. If you want to put ha arctos, go ahead. Let's say right down the line, bread is what? Ha arctos. Ha arctos. The throne is what?
Ha
thronos.
Now let's get our pronunciation here. We're on page 27 now. We're back to 27.
Thronos.
Be careful on your omicron. It's Omicron, not Omega.
Thronos.
All right, what's world?
Cosmos.
All right, Ha-cosmos. A stone?
Ha-lithos.
Lithography, you see, they have lithography for that. Word, the word is what?
Ha-logos,
logic. Ha-logos. The law is what?
Ha-nomos.
Because
of why?
Because these are all masculine.
Second declension
are all masculine.
Okay.
For all intents and purposes. You may find an exception here and there, but basically it's ha-nomos. All right? Crowd. The crowd is what? The place is what?
Topos.
Time is what? Topography, of course, place, and ochlos. Ochlos, there must be an English word or two. And nomos is metronome, the law of the measures, and so on.
Topology,
yes, for place. All right, what is the time?
Chronos.
All right, the time, chronology. The friend is what?
Philos.
Now watch your accent. Philos. You may not learn it, but when it's there, respect it. You know, the old salute. Philos. All right, that's good. Any questions on those? Philos, of course, from friend, philology, philosophy, so on, Philadelphia, and so forth. I learned those vocabulary words. And then notice on top of 28, take the words of vocabulary one at a time, writing them, so on, pronounce them aloud, use your cards, learn them thoroughly, whatever you want to do. Then observe. Observation 23, they're ending in os. They're in the audic clams in the Omicron, because they have acute accent on the penile. Well, forget the accent necessarily. Number 24 in Greek, all nouns, substantive, and adjective are declined. One of three declensions. Second declension has a stem with the ah. That's the masculine.
23, there was a point of that. It ends in os because it has the ha.
They belong to the ah declension. And they just observe that it ends in os. They have the acute accent on the penile. Logos, arcos,
thonos. Why do they all end in os?
Because they're in the first declension. The second declension. The first declension we met in the book, but they're the second declension in Greek.
Okay.
The first one we met, but they're the second declension, yeah. So it's a masculine. It's a simple thing. It's just saying they're all the second declension nouns, and they end in os.
Usually in os means it's masculine.
That's right, it is masculine.
Because
you may find an exception here and there.
Os most of the time.
That's right, most of the time. Basically, it'll be os. You know, way down the line, you may find a...
We'll get there.
But basically, for now, that's a good generalization.
Okay,
so for the rule, too, on this accent, then, is it falls on the penile. So if we had a three...
Anthropos, you mean? Anthropos, the three syllable. Anthropos,
right. If we had three syllables, it would go on the second.
This one would go on anthropos. It would be going anti-penile.
Well, that's why I couldn't understand. Why did he give us this rule? Because unless it lives in a long ending, which throws it all the way back, as far back as you can, to the anti-penile, why would he give us this rule?
He doesn't give a rule, it just says an observation. It's an observation they all have. They didn't say all these things.
You're
trying to get a ruling.
I'm trying to get a ruling.
I know. And that's why I said, don't bother with the accents.
But now that's just filler, that number three.
That's filler, yeah.
That's
right. A lot of these are fillers.
Right? Tell me where they are.
So don't bother with a lot of the things. See, remember, fellas, we're eating fish. Leave the bones on the plate. You know, eat the fish and enjoy the meat.
So you're saying 23 is background?
Well, at least 23.
23 is just a background, yeah. I would just say, let it slip in one ear and out the next or whatever. Right, 24 in Greek, all nouns, substantive and adjectives, decline one, three declensions, which we said before. And the stem is what remains virtually unchanged in all the forms, but you got these different ends. Now, the declension of logos, the second declension is. Now, logos, all right, let's say these first of all, and then we'll get the meanings of them. Together?
Logos.
Logos. Logu. Logu. Logo. 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 Logon. Loge.
Loge.
All right?
Supposed to say ha. First.
If you want to, but you see that thing, we haven't learned that. See, it's ha, logos, then it goes to logu and to logu. We haven't got those. Better leave those off.
Thanks. Yeah.
Just in the nominative, singular, ha, logos, that's no problem.
That's nasty.
Alright. Now, we go to the plural words. Ready? Logoi, logon, logon, logois, 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 logus, logoi. Alright? Now, as to the meanings, nominative is used in the subject. That's the subject, a word. The word is important. See, that's the subject. And, of course, I have these concise English grammars, and I have an advanced English grammar by Kipchoge and Farley, which are out of print, which gives a lot of background as far as English grammar and exegesis. They tell you about nominative and genitive and so on. I don't know, but it might behoove some of you to brush up on some of these in English. But anyway, nominative is the subject, ha logos. That form is used in the subject of a sentence. The word became flesh and dwelt among us. It's hologos became flesh. Say and dwelt among us. Hologos. That's your subject form. The genitive and ablative. This is what we call the eight-case system. We don't use the Machen's grammar because that's five-case system. And other grammars that are five, we use the eight-case system. We subdivide and we finally divide these different things. And that's
I'm sorry, what do they, in the five-case system, what do they consolidate?
They consolidate genitive ablative because it's the same form. It looks the same. They consolidate locative instrumental data because it looks the same, see? So they collapse.
Does it always look the same?
Always looks the same.
Always look.
All the time.
Why do they abbreviate it there?
Genitive, you mean? Ablative? Yeah, that's a good point.
We should all know that stuff.
Right? Well, no, but they should put it out. That's a very, very poor policy for beginning Greek students. What does ABL mean?
Yeah,
what
is AEM?
You've never seen it, see?
This is what I said about it. A lot of things came on real hot and heavy there.
Yeah, that's right. Well, now that's why I give you these blank forms, see, so you can flip them over and... Right here. See?
Okay.
See, you won't find me doing that. I write them right out. Yeah, I write them right out.
Appreciate that.
I don't miss anything.
Everybody know.
Yeah, if we were to want to get the meanings of this, we just consult any grammar, English grammar.
Well, we don't have all these in English. That's the problem. Yeah. Let me go down very briefly.
Okay, yes,
and then I'll say to go ahead, and because we got to close. And we'll close with this because we got to get this for next time. And we'll pick this up in our class next time. Logos is your nominative, that's the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Singular and plural. The word became flesh, subject of the sentence. Or the words were very sweet, and I did eat them. The words are sweet, the subject of the sentence. Genitive means of a word. For instance, it's that which is of something. The touch of his hand on mine. The touch of his hand. See, that's of his hand, that's the genitive of a word. In this case of a word, the sound of a word, see? The sound of a word. Of a word, see? That's in that sense. Ablative is from a word. Ablative is the source case. You are not from this world, see? I am not from this world. In that sense of source, where did you come from? I came from Alabama with a banjo on my knee. No, is that it? Louisiana, wasn't it? That's right. Old Susanna. Is it? I came from...
Alabama.
Alabama with a banjo. Okay. Where did
you
get Louisiana?
I don't know. Ablative is source. Conversely, genitive is...
Genitive is description. See, it's a description. It's like an adjective of a word. Just use the word of instead of from. Now, locative, instrumental, dative. The five-case system calls that just simply datives. They lop it all under dative, and the other lop the whole other thing under genitive. And there's an ablative type of genitive and a genitive type of genitive, see? But we split it down. The reason I'm using this is because Dana and Manny, the intermediate grammar, uses eight-case system. A.T. Roberts uses eight-case system. The reason I use this textbook instead of some other one, even though it's old and hoary with age, you might say, is because he's a pupil of A.T. Roberts. There's Southern Baptists, all these guys. This is one Northern Baptist, one Southern Baptist, Dana and Manny. One is Northern, one is Southern. But they're all of the A.T. Robertson School. They're all of the 8K system. It's a consistent whole. So you start with a 5K system with Machen, then you go into this 8K system with Dana and Manny, and what's the difference? What are we doing, see? And that's why I like to be consistent with 8Ks. All right, locative means location. At a word, at a place, at a certain spot. See, location. Locative, of course, meaning location or place. Instrumental being by means of a word. See, he won my attention by means or with his words, you see. The instrumentation by the way he did it. And the dative is you give something to someone, it's an indirect object, to a word or for a word. I gave it to her or for her. See, I prepared it for her or to her. It's the indirect object. Accusative is the direct object of the verb. He hit the ball. The ball would have to be in the accusative. What we call in the English the objective case. It's the direct object of a verb. Vocative is speaking right to someone. O word, thy power is great. If you're addressing something, see. O Theophilus, that would be in the vocative. Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter of righteousness. And directing your voice to God. Okay, and those are briefly what they mean.
Go for the vocative.
Vocative is an address to the person. If I address you and I say, Phil, do this, I put you in the vocative. See? But if I'm speaking to you, vocative means voice, directed to you.
And the accusative is the
direct object of verb. He hit the ball. He laid the book on the table. He read the book. Book is in the accusative. Direct object of he read. See? What did he read? He read the book. Direct object, accusative. All right, any other questions on those? All right, learn those and we'll pick that up in explanation next time. Any other questions? Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are a lot of them, but our time is up. We don't want to hold you.
So the accusative would be something like he spoke a word?
Yeah, the word would be the accusative, right. He spoke a word. Very good. Any others? All right. Yes.
No, excuse me. We just hit through 25. I know what.
Yeah, we're going to pick up the rest, so don't worry about the rest. But at least we got what we're supposed to have. We got four things next time, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Lego. We got the vocabulary. We got the exercises, the vocabulary, and we got the logos. Four things. All right, we're going to please close the word of prayer. So, Lord, lead you to close your class tonight.
Heavenly Father, again, we're grateful, dear Lord, to begin another semester and another year, dear Father, to learn another language as it relates to your word. Help us, O Lord, to have the mind to grasp this language and to be able to learn it well, that we might be able to use it and to be able to get a greater hold on your word. We ask, dear Father, that you would bless as we would go and give us traveling mercies. Bless the remainder of the week and our professor, dear Lord, as he would prepare to teach this language to us in Jesus' precious name.
Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Keep up the good work. I'll see you next week.